Blog Talk Radio.
For the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of my opinion. And if you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pGant. That's blogtalkradio.com/pGant. And you can send messages to the show on Twitter at GoForItGant. While you're there, sending me a message, make sure you give me a follow at GoForItGant. Selected to be joined today by Saints linebacker Nate Bussey, who will stop on by and talk about his season and talk about some of the things that's going on with him. Also, the great Willie Rofe will be by to talk about all things NFL and boxer. Welterweight Devin Alexander will stop by to talk about his upcoming fight against Marcos Maidana in February. Make sure you stick around. Make sure you listen. We got a good show for you today here on Go For It. And I want to start right now in the National Basketball Association, the NBA. And I want to start more specifically with Chris Paul and that whole situation. It's obviously a mess. It's obviously a mess. There was a deal agreed upon by the Rockets, by the Lakers, and by the New Orleans Hornets that would have sent Chris Paul to the Lakers, that would have sent Pau Gasol to the Rockets, and that would have sent Kevin Martin, Lamar Odom, Luis Scola, Goran Dragic, and a first-round 2012 first-round draft pick to the New Orleans Hornets. But the owners of the New Orleans Hornets, which is the NBA, the head of the NBA, which is David Stern, nixed the deal. He nixed the deal. He voided the trade. Apparently ownership wanted to void that trade. Apparently, if you look at it, ownership around the league wanted that trade voided. Dan Gilbert, the jilted lover that he is in Cleveland, wanted that trade voided. And a lot of other owners wanted to trade voided as well. And you know, when you look at the in terms of getting players and in terms of being a decent team this season, the Hornets did the right thing in terms of getting those pieces, Scola, Odom, Kevin Martin, Dragic. I mean, decent pieces. But the ceiling for that team is a 500 ball club. And I was reading an article by the great Peter Vesey in the New York Post, and Peter Vesey felt like this deal being nixed kind of helps the Hornets, because the reality is, like I said, the Hornets would become essentially a 500 team with Odom, Martin, and Scola. They'd become a 500 team. They're competitive, so what? But are they championship caliber? And in this league, isn't it all about winning championships? You're not winning championships with Scola, Odom, and Martin, and you're taking back some pretty big contracts with these guys. So, and I think Peter Vesey pointed out, he kind of felt it was a blessing in disguise for the New Orleans Hornets, and basically in a lot of ways he felt like this deal was saddled them with bad contracts, and this deal would essentially make this team a 500 ball club, but nothing more. Nothing more than that. And there's some truth to that. There's truly some truth to that, and I agree with that. But also, I think it's a blessing in disguise for the Lakers, because you look at it now. I mean, and this trade is probably going to be revisited, and I think when it's all said and done, I know there's talks that they're looking to revisit this trade anyway, and when it's all said and done, Chris Paul probably will end up in a Los Angeles Lakers uniform. But I look at it this way. If you're the Lakers, you're losing a lot of your versatility, and you're definitely losing your size. You usually don't trade small for big, and that's what the Lakers are doing. They're trading big for small. Other way around, I should say. You usually don't trade small for big, and that's what the Lakers are doing. They want big. I mean, they're getting rid of big to get small, and small is Chris Paul, and they're getting rid of big and Gasol and Lamar Odom. These are two versatile big men. These are two guys who, in my opinion, kind of set the Lakers apart on some level and really was a big reason why the Lakers won back-to-back titles. They were one of the reasons why the Lakers won back-to-back titles. Those two, Gasol and Odom. So if you lose him, and when this trade initially went down, I'm thinking to myself, okay, you're getting rid of Odom, you're getting rid of Gasol. So to me, I'm thinking that Dwight Howard is next. Dwight Howard has to be next. And that was my thinking. But then you hear reports that Dwight Howard wants to go to the New Jersey Nets and team up with Deron Williams and those boys. So now I'm saying to myself, okay, you're relying on Andrew Bynum, a guy who has not been healthy, a guy who breaks down and has broken down the past few seasons. You're relying on him. You're relying on him as your only legitimate big man. That's who you're relying on. To me, I think this is a blessing in disguise for the Lakers. At this point, again, I think it's going to be revisited, and I think they're going to eventually get Chris Paul. But if you look at it, you lose your versatility with the size that you had. Odom and Gasol, that's some good size, good athletic size. Long, athletic players, versatile players, guys who have gotten it done for you. Gasol didn't get it done last year for the Lakers. That's one of the reasons they won out against the Dallas Mavericks. But if you look at it, Dallas had some decent size with Tyson Chandler, Haywood, and Nowitzki. But now Chandler's going out of Dallas. So to me, with that versatility that you have with that size, you now are in good position. And you still were in good position, in my opinion. And I look at it this way. I think the Lakers, as presently constructed, are still a championship-caliber team and still is the team to beat out West. Dallas losing Caron Butler, who missed most of last season, I'll give you that, but he was the second-leading scorer before he went down. Tyson Chandler being out of the mix is big. He was big for the Dallas Mavericks, and he will be big for the New York Knicks. But the way I look at it, the Lakers, as presently constructed, with the size that they have, with Odom and Gasol, and granted, I think the trade will eventually go down. I think Chris Paul eventually will end up in the Laker uniform. But I think as presently constructed, I think they're a better team without this trade. I really do. I mean, you don't trade big for small. You don't do that. You don't trade big for small. And Gasol and Odom were two big reasons the Lakers went back-to-back titles. You are going to miss those two guys. And to me, you cannot rely on Andrew Bynum as your only true legitimate size there. A guy who has gone down seems like every year. So you can't really rely on him. I think for the Lakers, adding a Chris Paul and getting rid of Odom and Gasol is a mistake. I really do. I think it's a mistake. But we'll see what happens, and we'll see how that whole situation plays out. Let's bring in now 11-time Pro Bowler, the great Willie Rofe. Willie, how are you, sir?
I'm good. Well, I mean, they still can pick up some more pieces. I mean, you got Ronnie Tolyoff out there that dangling with $3 million cash that they're trying to get rid of in New York. I mean, they'll be able to pick up some size, but how often will they be able to get a point guard like Chris Paul? And I understand what you're saying, but Gasol is getting up there a little bit. Didn't play as good down the stretch last year, and Lamar Odom does it all. I mean, I love Lamar Odom for what he brings to a team. But I don't think it would be a bad trade. I think in the future, you know, Chris Paul, as Kobe starts to wind down, is a star player and is still young.
But if you look at it, let's look at it this year. This year, with Tyson Chandler now moving to the Knicks, out west, I mean, you're looking. I think Dallas is going to take a step back. You're looking out west. I mean, you still have to look out for San Antonio. They did have, after all, the best record in basketball last season. I guess Oklahoma City as well. But, I mean, to me, the thing that kind of set the Lakers apart was that size that they have and the length that they had with Gasol, with Bynum, and with Odom.
I agree with you, and I think it's going to be a shift in power. Now, we still don't know what's going to happen with Dwight Howard. Is Dwight Howard going to end up with the Nets? Is he going to end up with the Lakers? And you got to look at the Clippers. The Clippers just got Kawhi Butler, and they got some size with Kamen,
right.
Griffin, and Jordan. So they got a lot of size. They're young. They got a chance to be a lot better this year, but come with this season. But it's going to end up what happens with Dwight Howard. Do the Lakers still have enough to make a run to get Dwight Howard? I mean, that's going to be, you know, the key to that. Because if they get Dwight Howard, then it all works out. But if they don't get Dwight Howard, like you said, Bynum's been hurt a lot. But he's still young. Teddy's still healthy. If he can stay healthy, I think he can be productive. But they still need to get somebody to do the dirty work, like a Ronnie Turiaf or somebody in there to help Bynum out.
Yeah, I definitely truly agree with that one. But I don't know. I mean, you look at it, and I was thinking initially when this trade went down that Dwight Howard was next coming to the Lakers. I mean, maybe they had that in the works, and then you see reports that Dwight Howard wants to go to the Nets. So to me, I mean, if you don't get Howard, I question this trade a little bit.
I don't think they have enough to get Howard if they don't. If they trade those
right.
two guys, who you going to trade for Howard? Shannon Brown's gone. He signed a one-year deal with Team Suns. Then you have, I don't know if they brought Theo Radcliffe because he's coming back. And you had Joe Smith that was just on the bench. I don't know. You know, like you said, they're going to have to go get some more size. I know Marcus Saul is a free agent, but I don't think Memphis is going to let him go anywhere. So, I mean,
right.
They need to pick up somebody with the size in the middle.
Definitely. We'll see how this whole thing plays out. But, Willie, let's move to football now. Let's move to Tim Tebow. He had his best passing performance to date against the Vikings, 10 for 15, 202 yards, two touchdowns. The guy is 6-1 as a starter. If he leads the Broncos to the playoffs, is Tebow the MVP of the NFL?
No, he's not the MVP. He's playing excellent football. I don't know. I thought Minnesota would win that game. Minnesota has a 9-point lead in the fourth quarter, and it looks like they're just not covering anybody. I don't know what they're doing defensively, but some of those receivers in that late in that game were wide open. But I got to give credit to the Broncos. I have to give credit to the head coach, and I have to give credit to Tim Tebow and what that team is doing right now. The team's playing hard. Tebow is playing hard, and it looks like he's getting better every week. And, yeah, it's got to be off to this young man. He's really a pro football player, and he's really a guy that can help be to lead your franchise because of the way he comes to play every week. And like you said, he's getting better throwing the ball. And like I told you last week, I would like to see Tebow go, you know, maybe he's a left-handed guy, like go ahead, work out some with Steve Young or some of these quarterbacks. And just work on his mechanic to get better. He's going to have a full offseason to get better. And how far can they go in the playoffs if they get there? I don't know. I don't think they can go too far. Not unless he continues to work on his passing game. And do they have enough weapons to go very far in the playoffs? So, you know, it's going to be a lot tighter when it comes to playoff time.
But I look at this guy, Willie, and Tim Tebow, and I say, I watch the Broncos, I say to myself, to me, this guy is getting, and usually the quarterback gets too much credit and too much blame, but this guy is getting way too much credit for what's going on in Denver. The true story in Denver is Von Miller and that defense.
The defense is playing great. And Willie Spaghetti's playing great. The offensive line is playing good. Good football. But he is the leader of the team. And I think the guys play harder with Tebow. And I think the mentality with them, they think they can go out and beat people now. They think they can go out and win the game. So, I mean, I understand that you have to give credit to Von Miller and the way that defense has showed up this year. But I think the team is going to come with confidence, and Drummondville's been playing better lately.
Right, and yes, definitely. I mean, they're. I mean, the whole team is playing well. You're thinking, I get the sense that you're saying that this is a byproduct of Tebow in some respect.
I'm saying Tebow is the leader of that team, offensively. He's the leader, and I'm saying the guys on defense are getting everybody's getting confidence. And they know if they go out there and they can rush four and they can put pressure on the quarterback, which they've been able to do, then they're going to have a chance to win the game. And late in the game, if it's a close game, they have confidence knowing that Tebow can find a way to win that game. I mean, Tebow's going to wait for your defense to make a mistake, and then he's starting to throw the ball better. I mean, he obviously, if you don't stack the box, he's going to take out running the ball. But what is McGay going to run the ball? So, I mean, you know, either way you go, it's going to be tough to stop him now.
And we'll see what happens moving forward with this ball club. I'm very interested to see how they do against the Bears tomorrow. The Bears are a good team against the run, and so we'll see what happens. And I think Tebow is going to have to pass the ball to be effective tomorrow. And I'm interested to see if he can do it against that Bears defense.
Well, I mean, and think about it. The only team that Detroit jumped on them early. Now, if Tebow and the team has to play catch up, then I think they're in trouble. But with the Bears, with the quarterback situation, and with Forte being out, the defense is going to step up. But Tebow and them things are, if we go out here and our defense doesn't give up a lot of points, and I got to play catch up football, then I think they're in trouble. If the game stays close, and like you said, they scored a lot of points on the road against Minnesota, if the game stays close and they let Tebow and them beat the clock up, then you're going to be in trouble with them in the fourth quarter.
Right, and that's a good point about this whole situation. And Willie, I look at the situation with the Texans. I mean, this week they signed Jeff Garcia. They have T.J. Yates as their starter. I look at the situation with the Bears. Caleb Haney, he's struggling. The Bears are 0-2 with him as a starter. And I see that Donovan McNabb is still out there. But it's looking like to me that Donovan is going to be out there for a while.
Well, I mean, if you say he's going to be out there for a while, it's not before we left the season. So, I don't know what to say, man. You're telling me you're going to Jeff Garcia wasn't even in the league, and this guy gets picked up before Donovan McNabb didn't get picked up off waivers? I don't know, man. I just, you know, sometimes it gets to a point where these GMs just talk and they just don't want to touch you. I mean, that's all I can say is that I would have thought somebody would have gave Donovan a shot, but wow, that doesn't make any sense to me.
And we talked about it last week. It seemed like Chicago was the ideal spot. He's from Chicago. He grew up in Chicago, obviously. And so it seemed like that was the ideal spot, but for whatever reason, and the teams don't want to touch this guy, and I'm surprised he's still out here. I was thinking either the Texans or the Chicago Bears, but it's looking like nobody wants this guy. He's going to have to wait till next year
to
try to
Paul,
get on the roster.
Well, Willie, let me ask you something, Willie, because do you think what happened in Washington between him and Shanahan and the way that he left there and the fact that, you know, he went to Minneapolis trying to be a starter, do you think that, like you just said, GMs now have realized that until his mindset is that of a Jeff Garcia, who can step into into a role and recognize Jeff Garcia's best days were behind him. That he's coming in to do what he's told and that's it. Is it McNabb's reputation that's keeping him, you know, off these teams?
I would say the way he left, the way he left Washington has something to do with it. And I would say, you know, if they put the word out on you and these GMs don't want to touch you, then, you know, that's what happens. He went to Minnesota and didn't have a good showing. But that still didn't explain to me how you pick up a Jeff Garcia who wasn't even in the league. And Donovan McNabb, who's been practicing and preparing every week, who's been on an NFL roster, you pick up a guy that wasn't even in the league. I don't know, was he in the league last year? I know he played arena, that other football.
No, he played UFL.
Okay, he played UFL football. So this guy hasn't even played in the league in 2 years. And you're telling me you're going to pick him up before you pick Donovan McNabb up? I can't get that one.
And also, they picked up Jake DeLone, a guy
who didn't play, did he?
He didn't play. I mean, he played last year with Cleveland, but, I mean, he was awful. He was awful in Cleveland last year. He was awful.
So you're telling me McNabb is playing worse than those guys, than that guy? I agree with you.
I mean, I truly agree with you.
Well,
I mean,
But to me, Willie, it's all about, like I was just saying, and setting it up. It's all about the way he's handled himself over the last year and a half to 2 years inside this league. And you mentioned, I think the GMs around the league and the coaches around the league, the fact that he ran his mouth about that, and he still did, you know, when he got cut or asked to be released, that he believes he's a starter and believes he can do things, you know, instead of maybe going on and saying, listen, you know, I want it to be released because I want to help a team in any role possible. Instead of saying any role, he said as a starter. You know, and I think that the GMs and coaches in this league, they don't want to hear that from a guy who, in their mind, maybe could have been a good backup.
Okay, but he would have been a starter. If he goes to the bench, this quarterback they got now can't even complete a pass. I mean, I understand they got him dropping back 70 yards drops and all this stuff, but he would have been a starter, you would think, for the Texans or for the Bears in the situation they're in. We're talking about for the last 4 weeks of the season. Kind of Donovan McNabb been blackballed is what we're saying. So if you want to say Donovan McNabb been blackballed and teams aren't messing with him anymore, like T.O., like some of these other guys, then we can say, yes, that he may have been blackballed because these teams don't want to touch him. But in a situation where it's 4 weeks left in the season and you're waiting for your starting quarterback to come back, it's understood that when some of these guys get healthy and Texas don't even have a quarterback right now, that he would have been the starter on those teams for the rest of the season. I'm not talking about next year. I'm talking about right now.
And to your point, Willie, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, there's no way that Caleb Haney, Jake DeLone, Jeff Garcia, and T.J. Yates are better quarterbacks than Donovan McNabb. But you can't – I don't think anybody on this earth can make an argument that those four guys are better than Donovan McNabb. I don't think anybody can. So to me, there could be something to – there could be a blackballing type situation going on or whatever it is. And maybe – I don't know. I mean, but the reality is I agree with you, Willie. The point is when at the end of the year, Matt Schaub will be the starter in Houston coming into the following season, and Jay Cutler will be the starter in Chicago the next season. So, I mean
– but, Paul, then it's situational. You're talking – See, the problem is you say they're better than Don McNabb, but it's not you're not really being honest in your comparison. It's a situational better than Donovan McNabb because right now these teams aren't looking – they're not looking – none of them realistically going into the playoffs with – if you're the Bears with Cutler versus a McNabb, you're not winning the Super Bowl with McNabb. He lost the Super Bowl, Paul, in his best day. So the Bears are probably looking at this and saying, what do we want out of McNabb? What, getting to the playoffs and losing the first round when ultimately –
but that's not really relevant. I mean, the reality is the Bears are a playoff team. If Jay Cutler was the quarterback right now, they would be in the playoffs. Defensively, they're a playoff team. I think throughout that whole team, it's a playoff team. And I think Caleb Haney is not a playoff-type quarterback, and he's showing it. The Texans are 9-3 and have one of the better records in the AFC. And they're fighting for the top spot in the AFC. So you
need
to tell them
for the year. So they need a quarterback to get better and carry them into the playoffs, right, Paul? Schaub's out for the year. He's not coming back.
Right.
I don't know when Matt Lyman's coming back. So they need a quarterback, Jeremy, for the rest of the season and to get ready for the playoffs. So they need somebody to lead them into the playoffs and to try to win them for playoff games. So Chicago has Cutler coming back, but their quarterbacks are coming back.
And you think McNabb?
Dixon talks that Cutler may not come back. But go ahead, Jeremy.
Paul, both of you really believe. I mean, I know you do. We don't have to ask you. But will you believe McNabb, after what you saw of him in Washington and what you saw of him in Minnesota, you think that he's really capable of leading a team?
I think if you put him in short drops, and I mean, I don't know about trying to throw the ball down the field. I think if he doesn't turn the football over and he can sustain some drive as good as the defense is in Chicago, I think he can help that team or lead the team. Look what Tebow's doing. And McNabb can't take off running like that right now, but I think he can sit in the pocket and complete the pass. I know he was throwing some balls in the dirt. I wouldn't let him throw more than, you know, 25, 30 balls. I mean, the problem with Chicago is you got Matt Forte out right now, and that's over 50% of the offense. That's what's hurting them too. And the vice versa with Houston. Houston's got Foster, who ran the ball good last week. And as long as you have a running game, can move the clock. You see how important Foster is and how important Forte to be, and they still won the game without the other quarterback and Lyman getting hurt with Forte playing. I mean, with Foster playing good in Houston.
I understand what you're saying, Jeremy, and there is some credence to what you are saying about Donovan McNabb, but I think the point that I'm trying to make, and I think the point Willie's trying to make, is this. Yes, Donovan McNabb has struggled the past two seasons. Yes, we're truly not sure he is the type of quarterback that can really lead you into the playoffs and be successful in the playoffs. But you can't sit here and tell me that Caleb Haney, T.J. Yates, Jeff Garcia, and Jake Delhomme are better than Donovan McNabb, is a better option than Donovan McNabb. I don't think you can sit here and legitimately say that.
I think I'm looking at it. If you're looking at it from the reasoning perspective of why teams have shut him out, I think it's situational. I think they look at McNabb and say, "Well, what are you going to get? You're going to get a guy that's really not." I don't think McNabb would come into these teams and really be a team player. McNabb's got a chip on his shoulder.
He has to be a team player if he wants to have another shot in this league. He has a lot to prove here. He has a lot to prove. And Donovan has never been a cancer anywhere he's been. This guy, we're not talking about T.O. here. We're talking about Donovan McNabb. This guy has not been a cancer in and around the league.
Maybe some stuff went down in Minnesota. We don't know what was happening in that locker room in Minnesota. Once Donovan McNabb got this to Minnesota, we don't know how he was coming to work every day. Maybe his attitude did change in Minnesota. We don't know that. But you know the reason T.O. has not gotten picked up right now is because of what he's done on other teams. Because he should be playing somewhere. He could help some team play. Just making a run, especially the Houston Texans, who keep losing their number one receiver, Andre Johnson. I think T.O. would be a real good pickup for him right now because they're still making a push. But, you know, and he's been hurt most of the year this year with those hamstrings as he has been in the past. But maybe Donovan McNabb was not being as helpful to the young guy and being a positive role model when he was in Minnesota, which is understandable because he doesn't say he's not starting. But, you know, after 14 years, I guess the other team's saying they wasn't going a totally different direction. Didn't let him be on their roster. That's basically what they're saying.
Right. And, I mean, we'll see moving forward. But, I mean, I don't see him getting picked up unless, you know, something happens to someone's starter down the stretch here. But I can't, after not getting picked up by Houston, not getting picked up by the Bears, and you never know if Haney struggles again this week, maybe the Bears do make an attempt to bring in Donovan McNabb. But, I mean, I can't see a scenario at this point, really, where Donovan gets another opportunity until next year. And I think that opportunity that he gets next year, it's probably going to be a backup somewhere. I can't see him getting any more than that, especially after these last two seasons.
Well, it's been, how many years has it been, 13, 14 years? Well, maybe it's just time to hang those cleats up there.
And maybe there is some truth to that. I mean, if he's not willing to be a backup, maybe it is time to hang up his cleats and go to broadcasting, because I know he wants to do that. We're talking to Willie Rofe, the great Willie Rofe, 11-time Pro Bowler. And Willie, the Detroit Lions, 7-5. This team's got off to a 5-0 start, playing some good football at one point. But last week, I mean, the wheels seemed to come off. I mean, 11 penalties against the Saints. You got the whole Ndamukong Suh situation. This team is not playing disciplined football. Have the Detroit Lions lost their way at this point?
Yes, they have. They're not playing disciplined football. They're not playing fundamentally sound football. And, you know, it caught up with them. They started off great this year. I guess they got to read their clippings, or their head got too big. But they're just not playing fundamentally sound football. And I think it's caught up with them. I don't think they're going to do anything this year.
Do they make the playoffs?
Probably, maybe not.
Well, here's why I think they do make the playoffs, for the simple fact is the situation with Chicago. And I think it's going to come down in terms of the wild card between Chicago, Atlanta, and Detroit. Two of those three teams will get the wild card spot. Chicago, do you think Chicago turns this thing around?
I don't think Chicago will turn it around with Forte and with that quarterback in there. Unless they just play great defense and just get a lot of turnovers, I mean, how are they going to score points? They couldn't move the ball against the Chiefs. And the Chiefs have a pretty good defense, but the Chiefs beat them throwing a Hail Mary pass. Whereas you get beat on a Hail Mary pass at home, your offense can't generate anything against Kansas City.
I think the Lions will make it almost by default because of the situation in Chicago. I think that would be enough for them to get in. I think them and Atlanta will end up getting the two wild card spots. But again, Atlanta's really not playing good football either, so you never know with Atlanta. But I mean, I think those two teams will probably get the two wild card spots. And Willie, Thursday night, James Harrison was at it again. An illegal helmet-to-helmet hit against Colt McCoy. The guy lost $125,000 in fines last season for the same type of stuff. Do you think Harrison gets suspended here?
I think he gets fined. I don't think he'll get suspended.
You think he'll get fined? I mean, at what point does he get this thing? I mean, the rules aren't changing. At what point does he finally say to himself that he has to change the way he plays football?
Well, Willie, in all fairness, and I mean, like, you're a guy that played in the league for several years at a high level. I wonder sometimes how easy it is. It's so easy for anyone to say, oh, you know, why hasn't he changed yet? Or it doesn't look like when you watch the replays, it looks like a man who's playing football the way he was taught to play football. It looks like he's a very aggressive football player. Unlike, you know, it wasn't like where he stepped on a player or it was after the whistle. It was during the between the whistles. It was an aggressive football play, and I think that it's too often we're ready to say, you know, he's dirty. He's really, I mean, if you go back to your era, he's not a dirty player in your era, Willie.
No, I wouldn't say he's a dirty player, but I mean, you got a quarterback who's throwing the ball. You know, sometimes, yeah, you can hit the guy, but I mean, when you start launching into a guy, you know, who's defenseless throwing the ball, I think that's what they're kind of, you know, it's not the fact that he's doing anything, you know, hitting the guy right after he throws the ball, but launching into a guy like that, you know, right now, with the way the rules are around the league, they're just not going to let you do that.
And yeah, I agree with you, and I think he's going to have to make an adjustment. I mean, I understand what Jeremy is saying, but this is a different era of football. I mean, at one point, people could use the head slap. I mean, the head slap was a legal move in football. Now it's an illegal move, and guys have made adjustments. You got to make adjustments.
I'm pretty sure
bottom line, you got to make adjustments.
Football,
it's a different league.
We've been going after him pretty good, so he wouldn't be just walking around out there or hitting people. He'd be getting low and high and everywhere else when he came and tried to rush the quarterback. So he might not be walking around trying to launch as much because he'd be feeling it by the end of those games.
But you can speak on that. But Willie, I think that's what I'm saying. You can speak on this. I think at an extremely high level in that these guys like James Harrison, he's a repeat offender at some level. You're right. Where is the offensive linemen or fullbacks, tight ends that come across, and when he's not looking, just remind him that's what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
They'd be sending down in motion. You remember how they did Sean Merriman a couple of years ago? You send a guy in motion, and when he comes up here, they crack back on him. You got to send a message to him early in the game and de-cleat him. He needs to get de-cleated so he knows it can happen to him too. And I don't see that happen a lot. So, like you said, if teams playing against him, they need to be sending a message to him early in the game and knocking him off, coming blindside him. So he takes some shots, get cut, stuff. And then let's see how hard he does some of this stuff late in the football game. It's going to be a little different.
We're talking to Willie Rofe, 11-time Pro Bowler, the great Willie Rofe. And Willie, a big game in the NFC East this week. Cowboys-Giants, Sunday Night Football in Dallas. Cowboys 7-5, gave the game away last week against the Cardinals. Giants 6-6, tough loss against the Green Bay Packers there. But these two teams play each other twice, one more after this week. Willie, who wins the NFC East? Because at this point, the NFC East has become very mediocre. But Willie, who wins the NFC East?
I should have to get advantage to the Cowboys. I just it's going to be a tough game, and it's going to be between those teams, and they play each other twice. The Cowboys had a tough loss last week. It was on the road. Arizona played big. But I say I get advantage just the way the Romo's playing, the way the Cowboys have been playing of late. I would give advantage to the Cowboys winning the NFC East. And it's theirs to lose if they don't take it, But I think they still have the best chance of winning.
And what about the Philadelphia Eagles, 4-8? Have you given up on the Eagles?
I gave up on them. I gave up on them about a month ago when I was talking to you. They went out playing. The hardest game they played all year was against the Giants. And other than that, come on, man. They just no consistency.
They're still mathematically alive.
Tough situation. What are you saying?
They are still mathematically alive.
Okay. Well, you know that they're not.
We'll see. Willie, just like every week, we got to get your top five. You did a good job with the top five last week. What do you got for us this week?
It really hasn't changed a lot. I got Green Bay, Baltimore, New Orleans, New England, Pittsburgh. And, Pittsburgh's getting a little banged up right now. I don't know if you would want to put the 49ers in there. Because Roethlisberger and Pittsburgh, they're fighting to win games, and they had a dogfight against Cleveland. But I do have them in there.
So you have the Steelers at 5, and the San Francisco 49ers, the 10-2 San Francisco 49ers on the outside looking in?
I've got them at 6. Well, they're right there. They're at 6 or 5. It matters who you want to take, Pittsburgh or the 49ers.
I look at it this way. I think if you put those two teams on the field together, I think the Steelers beat them. So, in my opinion, I think the Steelers get the edge there over the 49ers.
Well, if they're playing in Pittsburgh, I don't know if Pittsburgh can beat the 49ers in recon.
Let's say neutral field. I think neutral field, you have to
Pittsburgh.
Right. I definitely would agree with that. I think neutral field, you would have to take the Pittsburgh Steelers. And to your Saints, Willie, the Saints are a team that I think we have to look out for it. They're playing some good football right now, and they're putting up a lot of points.
They're playing a lot. They're putting up a lot of points, and they're hitting stride. And like I told you, I mean, they're going out every week, Drew Brees and them, and they're going out trying to play to perfection. And like you said, as playoff team gets closer, they're trying to. They've been playing at this level for a few years now since Sean Payton got there. So you know, as playoff time comes, they're gonna be trying to hit full stride with the playoffs coming. So look for them to be real tough come playoff time, and they're gonna be ready to play this year. After what happened to them last year in Seattle, you know, they really got something to prove.
Definitely, and I think it also would be to their benefit to try to get that number two seed, because that team at home is, I mean, they're undefeated at home. They play very well at home.
I think that's the toughest place to play in the league right now.
Tougher than Green Bay.
Green Bay at home, both of them. I mean, the only team that almost beat Green Bay at home was the Saints earlier this year. And remember, if you remember, they had to run that punt return back to beat the Saints at home. So that was the first game of the season, and I mean, the Saints almost beat them.
And that's a game I wouldn't mind seeing again in the playoffs, the Saints and the Green Bay Packers, because I think that would be a very good football game, and I think that's a team that can beat the Packers. As we talked about last week, I think that's truly a team that can beat the Packers. The Packers are 12-0, Willie. I think they're going to go undefeated. I don't see them losing a game.
Unless Detroit can – don't they got to play Detroit in Chicago? Well, I don't think Chicago's going to beat them.
They have to play Detroit, but it's in Green Bay. And we'll see how Green Bay plays that football game, whether they decide that going undefeated is not as important as being healthy and winning the Super Bowl. To me, I think if you're 15-0 at that time, you got to go for it.
I think so, too. I think you got to go for it. At least have those guys out there in the first half and see how they play before you start pulling guys. I mean, maybe they go up on them in the first half and get a good lead. But, you know, that's a game, Detroit could come out there and play hard and give them a challenge. You know, maybe they'll come out there and play hard that game. We'll see.
We'll see. And Willie, we'll see what happens this week in the NFL. We'll see what happens this week in the NBA. We got a lot of great things going on right now in the sporting world. And Willie, do you see Chris Paul eventually ending up with the Lakers?
Yeah, if he doesn't end up with the Lakers, he's going to end up going somewhere next year, trying to go to the Knicks or some other team to be getting him. So I think for what the Lakers are offering, I don't think they're going to get a better trade than that. Even though they're looking at Louis Scola and Odom and saying that they're in their early 30s. Then you got Kevin Martin, who's been hurt a lot. But you're going to get some first-round picks, so I think that's going to be the best trade for him.
And we'll see what happens moving forward. Willie, as always, a pleasure, man. Let's do this again, and have a good week.
Yeah, you guys got to have a good week, too. I'd also like to say, we lost Chester a couple weeks ago, and then Luke Bush, who I played with in Kansas City, just passed away. So make sure these guys stay on top of getting their checkups and getting physicals and these chest EKGs. I mean, losing guys at 42 is too young. And Luke Bush was a great teammate of mine, so my condolences go out to his family. But make sure these athletes that play special playing football are taking care of their bodies and making sure they're working out after they retire, because these young guys need to see what's happening. It's sad to see guys, pass away that young, in life.
And it truly is. I think that's a great point. And for anybody, not just those guys, but anybody, get your yearly checkups. And I know it's kind of tough. A lot of men don't really like to go to the doctor and get the necessary physicals and get those necessary tests. But, I mean, these are necessary things as you get older. And to your point, Willie, I mean, it's something that we should all look out for. And let's look at you real quickly. I mean, you're a guy who was big throughout his career, and you're not playing anymore, so obviously you're not as active as you was as a player. what have you done to kind of prepare yourself and to kind of take care of your body?
Well, I try to watch what I eat a lot more, and I make sure I go and do my cardio. You know, I lift some, but I make sure I go to the gym and do the cardio. And I am one of those guys that if I take something wrong, I'm going to go to the doctor. So I make sure I go to the doctor and get my blood work done and get my physical and get stuff checked out. So, you know, your cholesterol and your, you know, PSA, you know, whatever your prostate cancer, and make sure my blood pressure is under control. So, you know, I monitor things and make sure I go to the doctor, you know, try to live healthy and eat healthy. So that's what I try to do now. But like you said, it's important to go to the doctor. And like you said, the men, we don't like to go and get stubborn, but it's something you have to do.
And definitely, and I think that's a great, great point. Willie, greatly appreciate it, man, and we'll do this again next week.
All right.
All right. The great Willie Rofe, 11-time Pro Bowler. And you know, Willie made a great point there, I mean, about guys and individuals taking care of themselves as they get older. I mean, the reality is you're not going to be young forever. You're not going to be able to eat like you want to forever. And the reality is you need to go to the doctor and get yourself checked out. And these guys, you know, these athletes, a lot of times, you know, they eat. Sometimes they continue to eat the same way they did when they were playing. And when they were playing, they were very active and doing a lot of exercise. They were able to burn a lot of this stuff. But as you get older, you're not moving as much. And so reality is, because you're not moving as much, you're prone to certain things, and heart attacks and things of that nature are one of them. So, you know, I think that's a very good point that he brings up, and hopefully guys will take into account that and will do what they have to do to take care of themselves as they get older. And I think that goes for not just athletes, but I think that goes for all of us. And let's move to the NBA now, and let's go back to the NBA, I should say. And a lot of moves being made around the league. We talked about the move that wasn't made in Chris Paul, but a move that probably still will be made, I think, at some point. But let's talk about Tyson Chandler headed to the New York Knicks. The New York Knicks bringing a Tyson Chandler, a guy who they need, a guy who will help their problems in terms of size. The Knicks have not had size these past few years. Mari Stoudemire was essentially playing center for that ball club. But Tyson Chandler now, you bring in a guy who's a gazelle, who can get up and down the court, a guy who can rebound the basketball, a guy who can defend the basketball, a guy who can block shots, a guy that you need protecting your basket. And I think that's a big move for the New York Knicks. And bringing him now, you had to get rid of Chauncey Billups. You had to use the amnesty clause to get rid of him, but you get rid of him, and also the team is looking to get rid of Roni Turioff as well. But you had to get rid of those guys, and we'll see how much they'll miss Chauncey Billups and if they truly can replace him. Tony Douglas is there. We'll see if he's the guy to replace him. But, I mean, bringing in Tyson Chandler is a great move for the New York Knicks. That's a team that does not defend the basketball. They do not defend, and Tyson Chandler defends. He defends. And to me, that's a great move. That's a great pickup to bring in at Tyson Chandler. And I think that's going to be a good move for the New York Knicks. And I think that with the move of Chandler, that makes the Knicks even – you say the Knicks with Melo and Stoudemire are dangerous, but with Chandler now, possible contenders.
I was going to bring that up, and I would agree. I mean, it's a totally different mix than the big three or the biggest three down in Miami, but – certainly, you have to think that, you know, Chandler really does, you know, I think give them the same level, I will say, on that same plane or plateau as down in Miami, because Wade is older. And so Wade, you know, by default, doesn't, because he doesn't have the young, fresher leg, you know, I think it will even out. And the other thing I think with the Knicks is that they didn't commit as much dollars you know, as Miami, it's interesting when they open up camp. I mean, they don't even have enough players to fill a roster yet. And so, I mean, that's ultimately for me been the biggest, you know, my warrior cry is how can a team be expected to win when they can't really monetarily fill out, you know, an entire 11-man roster? And you look at, you know, and Paul, I look at, you know, this move, especially with Chandler, the Knicks, and I think, like you said, this gives them, I think, three bona fide superstar players who, I mean, Chandler is coming into his own. But with a guy like Stoudemire, certainly with Carmelo, I think you can see now with the Knicks, they're going to have an ability in the East to be, I mean, a major, I think, contending force to Miami for you know, who is really the powerhouse in the East.
And, you know, you look at Chandler, I mean, he does what the Knicks don't have or have not had over the years. He defends. He rebounds, and he gives them legitimate size. I mean, you had Torrey Off and Amari Stoudemire playing center for you last year. Now you have a legitimate big man in Tyson Chandler. You have a legitimate big in Tyson Chandler. And it's a great move for the New York Knicks to get a Tyson Chandler, a guy who can, again, do it all on the defensive end, and a guy who can, you know, I mean, he can get up and down the court. And that's what the Knicks do. They play an up-tempo style of basketball, and he's the perfect big man for that. He is the perfect big man for that, and he's looking at 4 years, $58 million, so he's making pretty good money doing it. And to me, I think Dallas should have done more to try to bring him back. I think Dallas should have done more to try to bring him back. I thought he was a big reason the Dallas Mavericks won the NBA titles last season. And I think they may take a step back without Tyson Chandler. I really do. I mean, he was a guy to me that did a lot of the stuff that the Mavericks needed last year. And so you look at it, you look at this whole situation, and the Mavericks did try to offer him a one-year, $20 million deal, at least that's what some of the reports are saying, but apparently he wanted more, and ultimately he ended up with the New York Knicks. A great move by the New York Knicks, and we'll see what they do in terms of filling that point guard position, especially with Chauncey Billups now moved on. Tony Douglas, a guy who appeared on this show, is he the guy who's going to take that next step and who's going to be a starter for that ball club? Is he the guy? So we'll see. And you're wondering what's going to happen with Chauncey Billups and where he goes. The Miami Heat make a play for Chauncey Billups. Los Angeles Lakers, if you don't get Chris Paul, do you make a play for Chauncey Billups? I mean, so it should be interesting to see what happens to him. Or does Billups just retire, which some people have said he may do? So we'll see what happens with Billups. I mean, maybe the Hawks, maybe you make a play at Billups. I mean, there are some teams out there, but we'll see what happens with Big Shot Billups and what happens with him moving forward. But the Knicks, to me, they did what they had to do, and they got the big man that they coveted in Tyson Chandler, and that's a big move for them. And also, another move to me that will help a ball club is the Boston Celtics signing David West. And it's not a big signing, but David West last year was a big mainstay with the New Orleans Hornets. Granted, he went out with an ACL injury, but, I mean, he was a guy that if he didn't go out with that injury, who would have been very coveted by a lot of teams. He was a guy that would have been very coveted by a lot of teams if he was not hurt. So David West, in my mind, he helps the Boston Celtics big time, and I think that's a good move for him and for them. So we'll see what happens moving forward. Also, it's kind of sad. I mean, Greg Oden, again, reports are that he had a setback during his rehab from microfracture surgery on his left knee, and now some people are saying that he might be out again this season. He might be out again this season. This is a guy who cannot get on the court. And it's sad. I mean, the guy cannot get on the court. He just cannot get on the court. And injuries have been a big reason for that. He just cannot get on the court. It's just, you look at it, it's just sad. I mean, he's played only 82 games in his career. 82 games in three seasons.
It's frustrating. I'm sure, you know, you see these big guys, and they're very appealing. You know, 7 foot center. They're not bored every day, but, you know, it's like you said, it's confounding, certainly, that, you know, he certainly seemed to be a good, great talent, and certainly, it's been a hard career, and it's certainly the same with a guy like Yao Ming, who had a couple of good years there, and really kind of, it's a shame for the franchises too, because they build around these players, and then it really does, it can set them back for years.
And then you look at it, the 2007 NBA draft, the Portland Trailblazers had a shot at Kevin Durant. And they had the number one pick, and they chose Odom over Durant. And more often than not, you do take size over a wing player. But, I mean, you look at the way it's turned out. And also, I mean, at the time they had Brandon Roy. But now Brandon Roy, you have him, a guy now who's going to retire because of his knees. It's for whatever reason, the Portland Trailblazers are a cursed franchise in a lot of ways. I mean, Bill Walton, a guy, a very legitimate, a Hall of Fame center, obviously, but a guy who had issues with his feet. You had the situation with Sam Bowie, another big guy who broke down. You have now Greg Oden and Brandon Roy, two guys that were supposed to lead your franchise for the next 5-10 years. They're going too. So the Portland Trailblazers are a snake-bitten franchise. And for whatever reason, guys, whenever they go to Portland, seem to break down. And unfortunately, Oden out for another year. And this is a guy who had agreed to an $8.9 million contract for the Portland Trailblazers. Obviously now that's going to be restructured because of the injuries. So, I mean, it's sad, and it looks like this guy may never get on the court. And at what point do you say to yourself, if you're Greg Oden, at what point do you say to yourself that you just maybe it's just not in the cards for you? Maybe it's time for you to move on with your life. Maybe basketball and you are just not what it's supposed to be.
Paul,
maybe you're not meant to be a basketball player. Maybe you're meant to do something else. I mean, the guy is only 23 years old. So, I mean, he's still a young man, obviously. But he will turn 24 in January. But at what point do you say you got to move on?
Well, but, Paul, I mean, you got to remember. I mean, A, this guy, if he retires, it becomes now an injury settlement. You know, so there's a money part of all this, and I hate to be the guy that has to say that, but certainly when you're rehabbing and trying to come back, you're getting paid the contract, unless the team tries to bring you into an injury, you know, into an injury settlement. And the other thing is, this is a young guy, Paul. I mean, you act like he's in his 40s. I mean, he's not even 25. I mean, you know.
He's 23 years old.
Right. I said not even 25, so you clarified at 23. At 23 years old, Paul, I mean, how would you like if somebody told you you were going to be retired for the rest of your life? I mean, yeah.
I understand that. I truly understand that. My point is you 2007, you're drafted. You don't play because of leg injuries. You come back and you get hurt with your kneecap. So you miss some time there, you dislocate your kneecap, and then you don't come back from that. I mean, at what point do you say it's just not basketball in me or just not going to work? I guess I'm not, but I'm 7 foot, but I guess this 7-footer was not put on this earth to play basketball. Maybe this 7-footer was put on earth to do something else. And I could be wrong, and I hope I am wrong. I hope Greg Oden does come back. I mean, because I truly am rooting for this guy. I mean, he seems like a genuinely nice guy. I'm rooting for him to make a comeback and get another shot in this league. I really am. But the reality is, I mean, a lot of injuries to his legs, and it's tough. It's tough. I mean, microfracture surgery on your left knee. That's tough. That's tough. I mean, and the guy, it's just, it's a sad situation with Greg Oden, the guy who many saw as a guy who could do a lot of things, block shots, and be a very good center for the next 12 years in this league. But the reality is, this may not be meant to be for Greg Oden in this whole situation. And basketball is just may not be just for him. And that might be the reality of that situation. But we'll see moving forward with the Greg Oden story, and I hope it turns out perfectly fine. And also, Dwight Howard reports came out that he had a meeting with the Nets and that he wants to get traded to the New Jersey Nets. And so you look at that situation, I guess he wants to team up with Deron Williams and the New Jersey Nets. And, hey, if you can get a Dwight Howard and team him up with Deron Williams, you got a very good situation. But you look at it and you thought that the NBA would try to stop kind of this, you know, guys going to almost forming superpower teams and kind of leaving small markets and heading to these big markets like a New York, like a Los Angeles. But the reality, and I know a lot of people are out there kind of, and I'm kind of digressing off the Dwight Howard situation, but I know a lot of people out here are talking about super teams and guy and teams forming these super teams like they did in Miami, like they may do if you add Chris Paul to the Lakers, like the Knicks are doing on some level. And a lot of people are saying that this is bad for the game of basketball. But let's be real about something. The NBA, super teams have always been a part of the NBA. Let's look at the 80s now. The Lakers and the Celtics. The Lakers were a super team. Worthy, Magic, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. You still had Byron Scott, Kurt Rambis, and a few others over time. That was a super team. The Boston Celtics with the big three, Mikal, Parrish, Bird, Dennis Johnson, a Hall of Famer. Those four guys are Hall of Famers. Dennis Johnson, Kevin Mikal, Larry Bird, Robert Parrish are Hall of Fame players. So you look at that. You look at that. That is a super team. That is a super team. Now, maybe the way some of these guys are going about forming super teams is a complaint, but the reality is when you form these super teams, the reality is this. The 80s in basketball was a good time for basketball. 80s basketball was popular. The NBA was very popular during that time when those two super teams, the Lakers and the Celtics, were in the NBA Finals pretty much every year. You had the Sixers sneak in there, and then you had the Rockets also sneak in there a couple times, and the Sixers sneak in there as well. But, I mean, the reality is the NBA was at its best when super teams, when there were two super teams. And the reality is the Lakers and the Celtics were super teams. They were super teams. So the reality of it all is I know people are complaining about this and saying it's not good for basketball and whatnot, but the thing about it is the NBA basketball was widely popular in the 80s, and you had that rivalry, Boston on the East, the Lakers in the West, and you had that rivalry. You've had that, and it was good for the game of basketball, and people loved NBA basketball in the 80s. It was very popular. It was very popular. And it took super teams and superstars like Magic and Bird, but it took super teams like the Lakers and the Celtics to help the popularity of the NBA. And it was very popular in the 80s. And so the super teams are nothing new in the NBA. This is nothing new, everybody. Nothing new. Your thoughts, Jeremy?
Well, I mean, Paul, I was letting you hear you out. I think what's new, though, and you had mentioned this, is that for the first time ever, because, I mean, and HBO did a great documentary about a year or two ago on Michael or on Larry Bird and certainly Magic Johnson, and they often talked about it. Larry Bird was open and candid about it. He said he absolutely positively never would have wanted to, at that time, never would have wanted to play on a team, you know, with those, you know, with other players in that year. He wanted to play against those players, not with those players. And I think that's the kind of talk that separates the years. It's a totally different. These guys are not spending 4 years in college against each other in rivals. Majority of them didn't even know each other or only knew each other from, you know, hearing about them at different high schools. And so it's really a maturation, too. You're talking about, sure, Larry and Magic had a great rivalry when they were teenagers into their early 20s, but it was in college. But had they not had that experience, Paul, had they been 8 years old and had to forge a common, you know, relationship because they saw each other or knew each other because they were NBA players, things may have been different back then. I think that a lot of times it's very overlooked and easily overlooked when you do look at the fact that, Paul, these players are, they're kids. I mean, Magic Johnson, you know, Larry Bird and the 80s, as you say, certainly they you know, that whole generation, that whole era, if you will, of players had a different feel to it. Now you look at Kevin Durant. Where did he go to college, Paul?
Kevin Durant went to Oklahoma State, I believe.
For what, 2 seconds was there? I mean, these guys are going to college for a minute, if that. They're not playing. When you look at when you look at where LeBron James goes to college, when you look at, you know, Carmelo.
I'm sorry, Kevin Durant went to Texas. Let me say that again. Texas.
Carmelo Anthony, I think, wins the national championship as what, a sophomore?
Freshman.
And it's gone. And can you blame the guy for going? You know, can you blame the guy for leaving after a national championship at any age? I guess not. But they don't have rivalries, so they go into the league as almost as friends. Where Magic Johnson and Larry Bird, they go into the league as, I mean, bitter enemies because they fought each other for 4 years in college. So it really was, and the same for Michael Jordan, you know, and like, you look at great players in the year. James Worthy plays with, you know, some of these players, and where a lot of these guys, they're not playing with each other. And the difference between a 22-year-old young man and an 18, 19-year-old young man, it's a lot different, in my opinion. When you look at the fact that, I mean, you know, Durant is what? I think he's now 23 or 24, Kevin Durant. And he's been in the league 4 years. So it's, you're a veteran, but you're a baby.
But I think these guys do see each other a lot in terms of the AAU basketball, which kind of these guys end up traveling around the country playing each other. So I think they do see each other. Sometimes they play against each other. Sometimes they're not playing against each other. But I think, to your point, in terms of college, I mean, that gives time for guys. I mean, Magic Johnson and Larry Bird, you know, you can understand the hatred that can build up between those two, because, again, they're playing against each other, they're competing against each other, and they're competing against each other in college, and then they compete against each other in the NBA, so you can understand the buildup and the hatred between these two guys. You can understand that. You can definitely and truly understand that. But now you're seeing, you get the sense that guys, instead of wanting to play against each other, want to play with each other. And that's, you're looking
well,
at that.
You know, it's also, Paul, it's like the Madden effect. You know, when you can, you can trade a player to have more of your team, where I think, that's why I say a lot of these, you know, a lot of these players are looking at this and they're saying what to each other. That basically, like you just said, I mean, all they want to do is get a chance to play on the same team as each other. It doesn't matter that that they've never, and they probably never will, in their mind, they're not really, I don't think that they're looking at the disparity of the league when maybe 3-4, or if they could all, like, have a dream team where all five of them were on the same team. They're not looking at, the disparity of the talent pool inside of a league. They look at it as, wouldn't this be fun to try? Is it right of them?
Go ahead.
Well, I mean, is it right? And that's why, like, I will say this, Paul, getting back to Chris Paul. I mean, there is an argument out there that does, and I heard it come out and say, well, look at what, for example, what was it? Denver got in talent for Carmelo when he left, and I, when you look at the level of talent when these play or what potentially they think they're going to be able to get on the open market when these players are telling you that they're going to basically, if they don't get it now, they're going to leave and go get it somewhere else. So to me, I will say, I do think you have to look at things and you have to say, well, at that level, Paul, what is best for the league? I mean, is it best for the league that Chris Paul would be maybe to leave and go somewhere and play in a situation with the Lakers where now at least the team does get something rather than him signing as a free agent with the Lakers? Well, who knows? But I mean... By the same token, it is still a team that the NBA does not really – they're not in the business. The NBA itself and David Stern in and of itself, they're not in theoretically in business to be owning and managing teams. So I guess to their mindset, to sell a team with Chris Paul is probably going to be harder than not selling a team with Chris Paul.
Well, that in terms of the fan base in New Orleans, I mean, they're having a hard time filling that building. Granted, they had an increase in season ticket sales, but in general – they're having a hard time filling that building, and I think it goes to this point. I don't think a team should be in New Orleans. I don't think they should have a basketball team. I think you look at it many years ago when they moved to New Orleans from Charlotte. I mean, the Charlotte Hornets, they supported that ball club. Near the end, they didn't, but I think that was because some of the disputes that the fan base had with the ownership. But, I mean, in the beginning and through many years, that was a tough place to play in Charlotte, and that was a great NBA city. Granted, they're back there with the Bobcats, but with the Hornets, I thought it was a great situation there in Charlotte. Now, I just don't think now that NBA basketball belongs in New Orleans, quite frankly.
Well,
it is what it is. They're there. I mean, it is what it is. I don't think they'll be contracted, but, I mean, I don't think it belongs in New Orleans. I don't think basketball, NBA basketball belongs in New Orleans. I really don't.
But, Paul, that and we're getting into a more macro topic, but I certainly would like to get, even if it's a two-second answer from you, and you just used that word, should the NBA really start to at some point, look at or doing some level of studies on contraction? Are they too saturated of a league?
Well, I mean, you can make the argument that a lot of leagues, NBA, baseball, I mean, many years ago, baseball actually talked about contracting teams. But NBA, Major League Baseball, football, I mean, you can all make the argument that there are too many teams. You can make that argument. I mean, in terms of the NBA, in terms of contracting, I mean, I don't think – New Orleans, I don't think they support that ball club enough. I don't think that's a team that should be in New Orleans. I don't think that they belong in New Orleans. I really don't. And should there be contraction? I guess theoretically, in a perfect world, probably there should. But will it happen? I don't think it will. It's a hard thing to do. It's truly a hard thing to do. I remember baseball tried it. It wasn't successful. It's a hard thing to do, to contract teams. And I don't see it happening. Should they do it? They should definitely think about it. But will they do it? I don't see it happening. It's a hard thing to do.
Well,
so I don't see it happening.
But I see sometimes, like, you see some of these owners and like, everyone kind of coming out and saying fundamentally that there's this problem and fundamentally there's, you know, with small market teams. But ultimately, I mean, you have to recognize that small market teams, unless, again, you go and do what the NFL has done, which is put a hard cap in and revenue sharing throughout the league. And so whether it's small cap or whether it's small market or large market, I mean, really every NFL team, because they get a percentage of every other team, and certainly so they kind of made it more of a socialist society, so to speak. I mean, certainly there are teams that have more success than others, but they do kind of feed off of each other. Then you have to accept the fact that small market cities are never going to really be as competitive. And yes, that I do think what the Oklahoma general manager said is predominantly correct, which is it really is up to the management of that team to recognize that, you know, if they want to keep Chris Paul, they should have signed him well before entering into his last year. And if he doesn't want to stay with that team, that it's up to them to make sure that he stays with that team. It's really not up to the league.
Well, Chris Paul, I mean, last year there was rumblings that this was going to happen. I mean, there was rumblings that this was going to happen,
really,
that he was.
If they didn't want him there, if they, true or false, if they didn't want him there, I mean, if they were worried about this or they really wanted to make sure they weren't going to have a problem, they should have nipped this in the bud.
Well, I mean, they should have, I guess, put theoretically more around them if they really wanted him to stay. But, I mean, even if you do that, even if you put or try to attempt to put pieces around a guy, the guy still end up leaving, i.e. LeBron James. I mean, Cleveland put a decent decent number of pieces around him, and he didn't stay. He didn't stay, and I think he actually made it harder for Cleveland to put better pieces around him because he would not sign a contract, and he kind of made the situation, he waited the situation out and ended up going into free agency and ended up going to the Miami Heat. So kind of when that situation is kind of sitting over your head, it makes it harder for you as a franchise to figure out what you want to do and figure out what you need to do. So from that situation, I mean, LeBron James, his decision to leave Cleveland and go to Miami was his decision and his right, and you know, obviously he's a free agent. He can decide where he wants to go. But in terms of Cleveland getting a legitimate shot to surround him with pieces, I mean, they tried, but also at the same time, if LeBron would have committed to the situation, maybe they would have had an easier time surrounding even more pieces around LeBron James. And so the reality is with Chris Paul, the reality is with Dwight Howard, they're going to be gone. They're not going to be in Orlando. They're not going to be in New Orleans. They're not. So it's just a matter now of whether these two teams can get – you're not going to get equal value for a seven-footer who can block shots, run the floor, score the basketball, do all the things that Dwight Howard can do. You're not going to get equal value for that. And really the same for Chris Paul. I mean, a guy who can do a lot of different things on a basketball court, one of the better point guards, if not the best point guard in the game of basketball. So these guys are hard to replace. And so you're not really going to get true value for those few guys. But if you look at New Orleans, I mean, adding a Scola, a Odom, a Kevin Martin, a Dragic, and a first-round draft pick, I mean, it's decent pieces. It makes you a 500 team, I think, at best. But, I mean, it does make you competitive. But ultimately, isn't this thing about winning championships? And doing that type of thing? And does that move, or would that move win them a championship? Would bringing in Odom and Scola and Kevin Martin and those guys, does that win you a championship? No. There's no superstars out of any of those guys. Some good players, but no superstars out of any of those guys I named. So the reality is, you look at it, Orlando's going to have to make a tough decision, and New Orleans is going to have to make a tough decision. I mean, maybe if you're Orlando, you can try to convince Dwight Howard to stay, but maybe he doesn't want to stay. Maybe the reality is he wants to go to a bigger market like a Los Angeles, like a New York with the Nets. So we'll see what happens. I would like to see Dwight Howard and Chris Paul stay in New Orleans and stay in Orlando? I definitely would. I think it would be good for the game if those guys stayed in those respective cities. But they see opportunities. They see better situations in New Jersey or Brooklyn, in Los Angeles, or possibly even, well, not even with the Knicks now, because with signing Tyson Chandler now, you take away a lot of your cap space. So, but you look at it, and you just would love to see these guys stay in their respective areas, in their respective cities. But it's not going to happen. Dwight Howard more than likely will be traded. Chris Paul more than likely will be traded. And Dwight Howard, with his situation, apparently the GM for the Orlando Magic has given Dan Fagan, the agent for Dwight Howard, permission to speak with three teams, the Nets, the Lakers, and the Mavericks. And so we'll see if any of those teams can put together a package that will be enough for the Orlando Magic to bite. Let's bring in now, switching gears now, let's bring in now welterweight contender, the one, the only, Devin Alexander. Devin, how are you, sir?
What's going on, my man?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Oh, man, you know it's always a pleasure to be on the show.
It's always a pleasure to have you. And Devin, let's get right down to it. 147, here you come. You start off with slugger Marcos Maidana. How excited are you for this fight?
I'm super excited, man. I'm super excited. Because like I told you last time I was on the show, you know, I know I've been getting a lot of flack about my last few performances, you know, and, you know, I'm anxious to get back in there and show people why, you know, they call me the great and why I'm one of the best in the world.
And Devin, you talked, there were talks that maybe you would fight Ortiz, maybe Malignaggi, even Berto, but why Maidana?
Well, Maidana, well, first, you know, HBO, you know, they wanted to fight. And then Maidana was a person on our list that we wanted to fight, too. So him, Ortiz, or Malignaggi would have been perfect for my 147 debut. So Maidana's perfect. We know we're going to be ready. We know he's coming banging all for the whole 12 rounds, but we're going to be coming banging for the whole 12 rounds ourselves. So we're going to be ready.
And you look at Maidana, he's a guy, he's a slugger. He likes to bang, like you say. I would assume that the game plan here for you is to box him, is to out-slick him, and I think you have the ability to do that.
Right. And I don't plan on doing as much moving, but it's going to be, the slickness is going to be there. And, you know, I don't think I got to be running all around the ring like, you know, trying to get away from him. But I'm going to be slick, and you're definitely going to see, you know, what I'm going to do to him. I don't want to say too much, but we already got the plan into works.
So, but when you say that you're not really too worried about him, I mean, you certainly want to, as your first fight here at 147, you do want to respect, you know, his abilities.
Oh, indeed. You know, anybody who knows me know I don't take anybody for granted. So, indeed, you got to respect what this guy did, and you know, his knockout percentage and his power. So, you definitely got to respect that. But I'm talking about from my standpoint, you know, I'm not worrying about, you know,
worrying about that. You know, I know I'm going to be ready 110%, and, you know, I know he's going to be ready, so I'm going to be ready for whatever. We know what we got in front of us, and we know what he's going to be coming to do, so we're going to be definitely prepared for that.
We're talking to welterweight contender Devin Alexander. And, Devin, Maidana has been on record as saying that one of the ways to be effective against you is to pressure you. Well, what do you say to that?
Well, you know, pressure me. Pressure me because I can stand a little pressure. I can stand a little pressure. But, like I said, you know, a lot of fighters try to pressure me, you know, and, you know, I move around. But, you know, I've been working on some new tactics, and I don't feel like I gotta move as much as I used to. You know, and like I said on some previous interviews that I did with you, I'm steady learning. So I'm steady figuring out what I can do better and what I can, you know, limit it, well, what I've been doing in the ring. So you definitely going to see some new tricks and new stuff that I'm doing in the Medina fight. But we definitely going to be smart.
And you look at the fight will take place in St. Louis. Many have said that you talked about this earlier. Many have said that you've gotten the benefit of some hometown decisions. How much does that bother you?
Well, it doesn't bother me at all. It doesn't bother me at all. You know, I come to win, and that's what I do. You know, the fights that I had, the Kotelnik and the Matisse fight, were pretty close, but I thought I edged out in both of them. So, you know, it doesn't bother me at all. But this fight, I'm going to make it non-controversial, where I'm going to win, you know, conclusively, and people ain't going to have no doubt that I won.
What is fighting but back in St. Louis, is that going to help you? Does it give you, do you think, like an edge in training just to know your surroundings?
Well, it's not going to hurt me, and it's definitely going to help me because I know I'm going to be fighting in front of my home crowd again. You know, it's not my fault that, you know, I'm the only player, or when I fight my opponent, my place is the only place that's going to sell some tickets, you know. Medina, they were saying that he's not a big draw over here in the States, so they wanted to bring him into somewhere they could sell some tickets. So, you know, it ain't like, you know, we're forcing it to come to the St. Louis. It's just that's the options that we have.
We're talking to welterweight contender Devin Alexander. And, Devin, if you get by Medina, you have a lot of options out there. You got Amir Khan, who's fighting tonight and who is going to move up to 147. You might have the winner, Alberto Ortiz. You got Malignaggi, who has a title shot coming up. So you have some options there. Are you excited about these possibilities, man? There's a lot of possibilities and a lot of opportunities to make money.
I'm excited. I'm excited about the new weight. You know, I'm feeling stronger. I'm excited that I don't have to cut as much weight as I did before. And I know I'm going to be stronger and faster. So, and more, you're going to see more footwork for me, too. And I may, because my legs won't be there. So, I'm very excited. I know what I'm capable of doing. Like I said, you know, I know my skill. And I'm going to be very explosive at 147. And this is going to be my mark.
And where is training camp going to take place for you? Has it started already?
We've been in the gym for about a month now. You know, lightly working, but we're going to start up in another week or so, you know, full throttle. You know, we don't want to go in there too hard, too soon. So, you know, we're going to start it up another week and a half. We're going to go in and get to work. But right now, we just get my body back in the groove.
And, Devin, you had Thanksgiving a couple weeks ago. You got Christmas coming up. A lot of opportunities for some good eats. How do you resist the temptation, man? You got to make that weight.
Well, you know, I'm moving up in weight, so 147 is not going to be too big of an issue for me. You know, it's more or less of a pound, but you know, you definitely still got to watch your diet. You know, you're on a strict diet, and you got to follow the diet. I mean, that's what sacrifice is all about. You know, sacrifice equals success, and that's my motto through my whole career and my life. So I'm used to sacrifice.
And you're going to have to make a lot of sacrifices here, and that's what you do as a boxer. And Devin, big fight a few weeks back, Marquez and Pacquiao, somewhat controversial. Who do you think won that fight?
Well, my opinion,
If it was a draw, that would have. I thought that would have been for a shape. Because
right.
Well, Marquez could have did a little more. It's like he just wanted to do just enough to, you know, get the job done. But you got to go and take it because, you know, it's Pacquiao. It's pound for pound. So you're going to have to go and take it. And I thought it could have been either a draw or, you know, I knew Pacquiao was going to get it. So it's one of those fights that you really don't know.
And we got Amir Khan, a big fight tonight against Lamont Peterson. How do you see that thing playing out tonight?
Man, I mean, Lamont has all the skills. When I was amateur with Lamont, you know, he had all the skills, all the talent in the world, you know, and I just don't know what's been up with him his last few fights. You know, he got all the skills to be anybody because he's been number one in amateurs for longer. So, it just depends on what Lamont shows up. I feel it's a 50-50 fight, but, you know, it just depends on, you know, what Lamont shows up. You know, we know Amir Khan is going to come and, you know, do what he do, and we're just going to have to see what happens.
And definitely, I mean, it's going to be a good fight. I think it's going to be a lot better fight than some people are saying.
Right. Lamont's going to come to fight. It's not going to be an easy fight. Like Bob Arum said in a recent interview, he said, you know, Golden Boy probably made a mistake about bringing Amir Khan to his hometown. So, we have tonight.
And, Devin, it's Christmas time, a wonderful time of the year. What does a guy like Devin Alexander want for Christmas?
I don't want nothing. I just want to get back on top of my game, man. I want to get back to the top where I was at before the Bradley fight, you know, or where I was at during the Bradley fight. So that's my Christmas present. So I'm going to be working through Christmas. So come February 25th, that'll be my Christmas present.
And you lost to Timothy Bradley. Do you want another shot at Bradley at some point?
I do. I definitely do. I want to revenge that. More than anything, but I doubt if it's going to happen. Like I said in another interview that we did before, he's going to want to fight me when I'm at the top, and he's coming on the way down, and that's the only time he's going to want to fight me. But then it may be too late.
And we shall see. Devin, the fight takes place February 25th in St.
Mm-hmm.
Louis on HBO. You got to be real excited, man. I mean, you're going to 147, an opportunity now for you to silence the critics, man. This is a good opportunity, man. It's for you.
Yeah, man. It's a wonderful opportunity, you know, and it's a beautiful thing because people are like, you know, like, what's he going to do? How is he going to handle Medina? Or they're kind of skeptical right now. So it's a beautiful thing because when I do get in there and I shine like new money, you know, I don't want the people that jump off the bandwagon to jump back on. I want them to stay over there and let me continue to ride my thing on to the promised land.
Well, Devin, if you do what you got to do February 25th, you seem very confident that you'll do it, there's a lot of money out there for you to be made, a whole
Indeed.
Lot of money.
Indeed. Well, I'm gonna share it with you, my man. Don't worry about that. We go all split it up. Don't worry about it.
Well, that's good news to me, Devin. And how's the new house? I know I asked about it all the time, but how's it going over there?
The new house is good. I just renovated the bathroom now. I mean, I'm excited. Like I said, I'm blessed. You know, I'm just taking it one step at a time, staying humble. Staying grounded, you know, and staying hungry. That's all I'm doing. And taking care of the family. That's about it.
And those are three good things to be doing right now. Staying humble, staying hungry, and staying grounded. And keep doing it, man. It is a pleasure having you. We wish you nothing
always.
But the best of luck against Maidana. And real quickly, can I get a prediction?
For the Maidana fight?
Yeah.
Well, you know, what we're going to do is we're going to beat him up for about 5 or 6 rounds. Then we're going to bring the fight to him because then he's going to figure out that I'm way too skillful for him, so his head's going to be all discombobulated. Then we're going to go in and we're going to go forward, and then we're going to see what happens from there.
And we shall see what happens February 25th on HBO in St. Louis, Scott Trade Center. I'm looking forward to it. I know you're looking forward to it, man.
Y'all coming out?
We'll see.
You know what? We'll have to talk about that.
If you supply the tickets, we're there.
Okay. Let me know if y'all can make it. I got you covered.
All right.
Okay.
Devin Alexander.
We never had a road show, Paul. Maybe it's time we do a road show.
Who knows? I mean, maybe we'll go to St. Louis and see what it is in the Lou and have a good old time in the Lou. But we'll see. He's obviously excited about his upcoming fight against Marcos Maidana, and it should be a very interesting fight. Let's bring in now New Orleans Saints linebacker, Mr. Nate Bussey. Nate, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
And Nate, I look at your Saints right now, 9-3 on a four-game winning streak. Obviously, you guys are scoring a lot of points. But what do you think has been the reason for this success in this four-game winning streak?
I'll say the big reason for the success is that the team camaraderie that we have here in New Orleans Saints. Everybody plays together. Everybody is one unit. And we all love each other the same way as like brothers. So we are one big team. And I can say that about us. We call ourselves a tribe. So, you know, no one person is trying to break the tribe, and no one or two people is trying to, you know, stray away from the tribe. We all came together, and we've been staying together for this streak.
And the tribe, as you refer to your team, you guys got together in the off season. How much has those off season workouts helped you guys?
The off season workouts helped us a lot because we learned the scheme, especially us rookies that just came in. We learned all the defensive and offensive schemes, and the veterans here was helping us throughout the whole process of training camp and still helping us throughout the whole season as well. So the Tulane training camp that we had preseason, I would say, was very helpful for me as a rookie and as the team so we could rebuild a good chemistry together.
And some people may have said that those off-season workouts were a little overrated. But the way you're talking, I mean, those off-season workouts were very big, and you really learned a lot from them.
Oh, it was very big. You know, we hit the weight room. We did a lot of conditioning. We ran the plays that we knew we was going to out the playbook from the previous season, you know, because of the lockout, nobody had playbooks or anything like that. So we were trying to learn as they were teaching us on the field. But some of the things that they have taught us, we haven't really done much of. We didn't change the whole scheme around, so it's just different now. So just learning everything on the fly at the time that I did, it really helped me, though, right now in the stage that I'm in right now, as well as being with the team.
Was this offseason for your team, in comparison to the rest of the league, as fluid as maybe others because you did these practices?
I would say it's most influential because the team captains that we have on the team are offensive and defense. You know, offense, we got Drew Brees, and on defense, we got Jonathan Vilma, and Will Smith as well. So with the team captains that we have and bringing us all together and keeping us together as one was very influential to helping everybody in the process of us becoming right now 9-3.
And you talked about Drew Brees, and Drew Brees is playing some lights-out football, over 4,000 yards passing, 30 touchdowns. You see him up close and personal every day at practice. How great is Drew Brees?
Hey, Drew Brees is a great guy, and he's a competitor as well. I love Drew to death, and he's on fire right now. So by him being on fire and being the person that he is, there's no telling how far we can go with the streak that he's putting together as well as the performance that he's producing on the field.
We're talking to Saints linebacker Nate Bussey. And Nate, your Saints, they travel to Tennessee to play the Titans tomorrow. Titans are playing some pretty good football. What do you feel like you guys need to do to get that win?
Well, we just need to go and be prepared like we always are every week and stay focused, you know, do what we do as an offense, as a defense, and as a special team unit, and play hard every play and play every play like it's your last. And then we'll judge our body of work over four quarters once we're done.
And you look at your ball club right now. you're the third seed behind the Packers and the 49ers. To me, if you're the Saints, obviously the number one seed is really kind of out of the question at this point. But you can get that second seed, and that second seed to me would be big. You guys play well at home. How important is getting the second seed for you guys?
Well, all seeds are important, actually, because, you know, by me, especially to me being a rookie going through it for the first time and seeing, like, how everything operates when the time comes and how people prepare for it, like how my team prepares for things like this.
By the same token,
preparation does not change, and we still don't look forward to, like, being a two or one seed. We just go out every week and prepare for, you know, the best possible outcome. So when the time comes for the postseason and things like that, I'm sure they'll fill us in on where we need to be or where we're going to be when the time comes.
And, Nate, you were a seventh-round draft pick out of Illinois. You were cut, the final cut down by the Saints, but ultimately you were signed to the practice squad. When you were cut by the Saints, did you think or did you know it, that you would be back in some capacity?
Kind of, sort of. But, you know, I judged my body of work over the preseason that I did since I, you know, got drafted here at the New Orleans Saints. And I felt myself and my coaches have told me I've progressed, you know, a long way. I've come a long way, you know, especially coming from the new position in college and, you know, trying to transition to the NFL. So I've been getting a lot of compliments and things like that. So with the transition right now, I knew that I'd be back here with these great coaches and this organization. I had a 95% chance that I knew I was coming back.
And you're on the practice squad. You don't play, but you do practice with the ball club. Is it tough sometimes to keep yourself sharp mentally and physically?
I'll say it's tough because you think about, like, when is your opportunity going to come by being on the practice squad? You think about when it come, are you going to be prepared? Are you going to be ready? You know, you think about things like that, but at the same token, when you got the desire to just want to be, you know, a great person as well as an athlete, then when that time comes, I'm sure when it presents itself, I will be ready for it, or a person like me will be ready for it.
And how much have you learned being on the practice squad and being able to practice with this team day in and day out?
Well, I've learned a lot, you know, especially being on the practice squad and going up against a guy like Drew Brees every day who's on fire on Sundays, and I see him every day in practice, you know, going up against him. You know, it's just an amazing feeling, and it's just amazing how, you know, being on a team like this and how the team is going and how they have took me under their wing, and, you know, to make me a better ball player. It's just, you know, words can't describe it.
We're talking to Saints linebacker Nate Bussey. And, Nate, your college teammate Martell Wilson was drafted by the Saints as well. How much has Martez helped your transition into the league?
Martez has been a major factor and a transition point in transitioning into the league because, you know, by us coming from the same college, you know, being best friends and things like that, we always talk, we study, you know, film, playbooks, and so just everything that we kind of do dealing with the team is always, you know, we do it together because, you know, we try to both figure it out at the same time or something like that. But by him being here and being on the field and then, you know, he comes to talk to me about, like, what happened or if I see it on film or things like that, see it during the game day. And we always talk about, you know, things that we need to work on and things like that. So he's been a major help to me in my, you know, career building right now as well as I've been to his.
And, Nate, you were a big-time quarterback in high school at Dunbar High. Were you recruited as a quarterback coming out of college?
I got recruited to a couple of places to play quarterback. I'm not going to say I turned any place down. I just wasn't done with the recruiting process at the time when I made my commitment to go to Illinois. So I made a commitment early, and I'm the type of guy, I make a commitment, I'm going to stick to it. So I committed early to Illinois, and some more offers that came across the table, and I had to turn them down because, you know, I'm a loyal guy.
And, Nate, on the show, we like to play a game called Who's Better. I'll give you two topics. You tell me who's better. You ready to play?
Who's better?
Yeah.
Okay, so what I got to do?
I'll give you the topics. You tell me who's better.
Okay.
Better quarterback, Drew Brees or Nate Bussey?
Oh, man. I'll definitely say Drew Brees because he had the knowledge to the game. He's been doing it the longest. And just but the stuff that I've learned playing quarterback and reading defenses and things like that has helped me a lot in my transitions from different positions as well, though. But I'll say his knowledge of the game and the way he performed on the field, I'll say he's better.
Nate, over 8,000 passing yards in high school. I mean, you sure?
I mean, my stats are going to talk some numbers now. They're going to be up there. I had pretty good stats, and I was a pretty good quarterback. But I guess nobody wanted to take a chance on me playing quarterback for them at their university, so I just had to make a decision.
And real quickly, do you miss the position?
I kind of do, but I still throw the ball every day. Like, when I go out and practice, I'm always the first one on the field. I go out there, I throw the ball, I play catch. You know, I still work on some quarterback mechanics type things because you never know, like, when my time can come. I might be in for a different play or I might be in an offense one year. You never know when that time will come, and I want to be prepared for whenever the time presents itself.
Better rapper, Lil Wayne or Jay-Z?
I like Lil Wayne a lot. You know, he's hot, but I like Jay-Z lyrically. So I would say Jay-Z.
Okay. And lastly, better restaurant, McDonald's or Burger King?
I'm going to go with McDonald's over a million, sir. Over a billion, sir.
It's kind of hard to argue with that. I truly would agree with you on that one. And Nate, you played the game. You played the game very well. And Nate, it's the holiday season, the most wonderful time of the year. What does a guy like Nate Bussey want for Christmas?
What does Nate Bussey want for Christmas? Nate Bussey wants an 80-inch TV for Christmas. I think he's going to treat himself to that.
That's a beautiful thing. That's a beautiful thing. What do you need 80 inches for?
I got a nice little place that I stay in down here in New Orleans, and I think a nice size TV in my front room to make the room fit better, you know, make it look better. 80 inch.
And that's going to be some good watching there. 80 inch TV. I mean, that's some good stuff there. How do you like New Orleans? How do you like staying and living in New Orleans?
I'm loving living in New Orleans. You know, it's very different. You know, it stays hot a lot, but the last couple of days we've had a cold draft, I would call them. But I love it, though. I like the different places to eat, you know, different places to go, you know, especially if you got kids or things like that. You know, there's a lot of fun. It's a fun, you know, city, especially part I'm in, the Jefferson Parish part. So I love New Orleans.
Nate, good luck with you in New Orleans. We appreciate you stopping by, man, and good luck moving forward, and good luck the rest of this season. And the Saints, to me, I mean, they're a team that can challenge the Green Bay Packers. So we'll see what happens moving forward. But, Nate, nothing but a pleasure having you, man. Let's do this again.
All right, we will. Thank you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Take care.
All right, you do the same.
Nate Bussey, linebacker for the New Orleans Saints, and Nate's going to get himself an 80-inch TV screen for Christmas. I mean, that's a beautiful thing there. That's a beautiful thing. Could you imagine 80 inches?
Paul, can you stop it?
I mean, I got a 50-inch screen here, but you're talking about an additional 30 inches.
Sounds like you're jealous of a couple of inches there, Paul. Which, you know,
I'm a little jealous.
I
am a little jealous of that. I mean, 30 inches is a beautiful thing. I mean, I would love
to have what you have, Paul. Be happy.
That's
with
a good
you
point.
Have a wife. You have a child, you know, obviously your inches, your TV, so to speak, is large enough.
Man, that's a good point. That's a good point. We should all be happy with what we have, whether that is a 30-inch TV, a 20-inch TV, even a 10-inch TV. You know, we're fortunate enough, I'm fortunate enough to have a 50-inch TV, And I'm sure, you know, I would love to see an Idiots TV. I'm going to, after the show, I'm going to Google an Idiots TV, and I'm going to see what it looks like. I'm going to Google it, and I'm going to see what it looks like.
Paul, do you want an Idiots TV for Christmas, Paul? Is that what you're saying?
You know what? Let me put it out there. I want an Idiots TV for Christmas. You know what? I've been thinking about it. I want 80 inches, too.
Well,
oh, why can't I have 80 inches?
You need to talk, Paul. You need to, obviously talk to the boss, talk to your wife. Maybe your wife doesn't want 80 inches, Paul. Did you ever think of that?
That's a good point. That's a good point. It's a lot of inches. That's a lot of TV.
It's a lot of TV, you know?
I think it would really, you know,
sometimes,
be a nice...
Paul, they say a lot of times, Paul, it's not about the inches. It's about how you use the inches.
Oh, that's a great point. That's a great point. Never thought about it that way. So if you use the 50 inches in the right way, then 50 could look like 80 or be like 80 or almost feel like 80.
Yeah, you know, you can even get 32 to be 80, Paul. You can get 4 to be 80.
I guess so,
you might be able to get 4 to be 80.
I think we're going to stop at 32 inches. I think we'll stop right there at 32 inches. I think we'll stop there.
The question is, where is this 50-inch TV? I mean, how many inches are in your bedroom, Paul? Is your TV in your bedroom? So are you stopping at 32 at the bedroom?
The bedroom is small. The bedroom TV is small.
That could be
so,
a problem,
you know, I mean,
Paul. That could be a problem.
I mean, I don't need it. I don't need it, like you said.
Well, you put it out there. You put it out there, Paul.
I did put it out there, but do I need it? Do I need it? I put it out there, but do I need it?
Only you know that, Paul. Only you know what you need in the bedroom.
And I guess that's a great point. I guess only I would know if I need it or not. I want to switch gears now and to a guy that can afford a lot of 80-inch TVs, and that is Albert Pujols. 10 years,
wow.
$254 million, signing with the Los Angeles Angels. That is a lot of 80-inch TVs right there. That is a lot of 80-inch TVs right there. Albert Pujols, $254 million. What a country. 31 years old. When his contract is near the end of his contract, I mean, Albert probably will be DHing at this point, and hopefully he'll have a lot of baseball left in him. But my goodness,
Paul, you will agree though. It's a savvy business move by the Angels, because obviously to overpay. They're saying they overpaid, but certainly you bring up a great point, and I'm glad at least you hit it. He can, at any point in, you know, during this, as long as his offense obviously can stay on the upper end of where it has been, he could be a DH very successfully for this team for 10 years. And so kudos to Albert Pujols, if no one else, for going in, you know, moving to the American League and giving his body maybe the ability to last the 10 full years, which if you do the math, 10 divided by 254 is a cool 20. $5 million per year.
What a country.
That's a lot of money.
I mean, what a country. And you got to remember, Artie Moreno, the owner of the Los Angeles Angels, paid $184 million for the Angels franchise back in 2003. Fast forward 8 years later, he's going to be paying $254 million to Albert Pujols. And let's be clear, Albert Pujols is probably one of the best players in the game of baseball, if not the best player in the game of baseball. He can do it all and can do a lot of things. 10 years is a long time for a 31-year-old player. But again, being in the American League, he can DH. And so that's a benefit for him as he gets older.
Is this a mistake?
Well, you look at the last team, the Texas Rangers, who had numbers like this, A-Rod, you look at it, $252 million. And then, you know, you look at, I mean, that's a lot of money by the Texas Rangers, a team. But they, I think the Angels, obviously, are a better baseball team at the stage that they got Pujols than when the Rangers got Rodriguez. So, I mean, it's a mistake. If you win some championships, no, it's not a mistake. If you don't, then I guess you can say it is a mistake. I mean, that's a lot of money. It truly is a lot of money. Also paid 5 years, $77 million for C.J. Wilson, one of the top starting pitchers that was out there. So, I mean, they're gearing up. They're gearing up. And C.J. spent last season with the Texas Rangers and had a good year with the Rangers, 16-7. I mean, under three ERA. I mean, he had a decent year for the Texas Rangers. I mean, they put out a lot of money. They threw out a lot of money here, and hopefully they'll get what they paid for. They'll definitely probably get what they paid for early in this deal. Near the end, maybe not. But early on in this deal, they will get what they paid for. And you look at it, the Cardinals were not willing to go over that $200 million mark. So Albert, on some level, he took the money. He took the money, and maybe he felt like, you know, he wanted to change. He wanted to change and wanted to move on. I mean, he's done a lot in St. Louis. He did a lot in St. Louis. He did a lot in St. Louis and was successful in St. Louis, won two titles in St. Louis. So, I mean, he theoretically did a lot in St. Louis. And if you're a Cardinals fan, you might be disappointed, but you can't be really upset because the guy really did so much for your franchise and won you a lot of baseball games throughout his time in St. Louis. But Albert Pujols moves on now, and he moves on to the Los Angeles Angels for $254 million over 10 years. That's a lot of 80-inch TVs in the Pujols house, and that's a lot of good times in the Pujols house. What would you do with $254 million? What would you do with that, Jeremy?
Well, 10% goes right to the church. We know that.
That's $25 million.
You know, bang, first year. And, you know, I may get an 80-inch TV or two, and I can tell you that, you know, 40% of it's right over to the government, and I'm probably going to relax a little bit, Paul. I think I'm going to get back to watching some football.
Okay.
Hire a nanny. We'll hire a nanny, you know what I mean?
Nah, I'm not going to hire a nanny. I got all the time in the world to spend with my kids.
I'm going to hire. Well, I will spend some time with me.
Maybe a cleaning service, but not a nanny.
Well, I'm going to hire some time, you know, spend some time with me. So, you know.
Well, I mean, that would be. Then maybe you don't need $254 million. Maybe you just don't need it because you wouldn't do it right. I mean, you would not spend any time with your kids. I mean, that would be awful.
I didn't say any time with my kids. I said I'm going to take some time for me. Sometime.
Well, I mean,
don't
and that's
twisted.
Taking away time from your kids, correct?
No, it's making me a better person. I'm going to be a better dad. You know
okay.
what I'm saying? I'm going to do some other things, you know, make some other plays, as they say. But it's $254 million. I don't really know, Paul, if there's anything you could do that would be a mistake with $254 million. I mean,
theoretically, you could lose it. You could lose it. I mean, Mike
well,
Tyson.
Well, I mean, I'll do the math for you, Paul. 254, 40, 45. Well, if it's in the state of Pennsylvania, 41% of it is away. So now you're down to what? Just under 160 mil, and now you got to look really. Ultimately, I mean, he had to give 10% of the top of that to the agents. So now 260 less 25, so say 140. Now you're down to 140 million. And at 31 years old, I mean, it all depends on your lifestyle. You're right. I mean,
yes, true. I mean, but you have to work hard to get rid of it. You say that, Paul.
But you see a lot of these athletes. It doesn't seem like they're working that hard, and they get rid of it faster than you and I could imagine.
And that's a great point. We want to thank Willie Rowe for stopping by. Make sure you follow him on Twitter, Willie_Rowe. Also want to thank Nate Bussey of the New Orleans Saints for stopping by. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at NateBussey59, and that's Nate and that's Bussy, B-U-S-S-E-Y, 59. So make sure you follow him on Twitter. And also, Devin Alexander, we also want to thank him for stopping by. And make sure you follow him on Twitter, D-Alexander-Real. And we're looking forward to that big fight. Maybe, just maybe, we'll take this on the road to St. Louis for that big fight. We shall see. You can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/pgan, where you can listen to this show and other shows. And I wrote a pretty good article on Tim Tebow, so make sure you go to bentleyradio.com and read my article on Tim Tebow. It's under the short yardage section, so make sure you go to that and check it out. That's bentleyradio.com. For Jeremy Espy, this is Paul Gant. Hope all is well. Hope you're enjoying the rest of your Saturday. See you later. Bye.